everybody. Welcome to the second episode of Team Attack. On this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the new Aliens release. We're going to be taking an in-depth look at the Gen Con 10K and talking about some of the more popular cards and decks from that. And we're going to do our first deck dissection on the top four Dragon deck. We're also going to get an in-depth tournament report from Tim. But before all that, I'd like to take a moment to apologize. At the end of the last episode, I said that Tim Saunders of Pauper Tim would be joining us today as a guest host. That is regrettably untrue. However, it is my pleasure to announce that Tim will be joining us permanently as a host of the show. So to kick things off, welcome aboard, Tim.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem.
Welcome.
Hello.
It's good to be on here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you on as a permanent host in this now. So last, first episode, we went over sort of our history within TCG, CCGs. How'd you start?
I started with a group playing Dungeons & Dragons when I was like a freshman in high school, and I don't know if I picked it up my freshman year or that summer, but I started playing Magic around that age, so around like 99, 2000. And ever since then, I've been pretty big into Magic, and I've tried other card games out. I even tried the original Versus out and just bought a couple starter decks, but I was never really competitive or kept up with the game after that. I've always been super competitive in Magic, although what I did with Magic was I created my own format on Magic Online. I'm one of the founders of the Pauper format, and that's why I have the name Pauper Tim.
Yeah, I thought that was super interesting. I never knew that until I read your Thanos article, that you'd sort of started that. And then Wizards picked it up.
Yeah. So what they did is there was a bulletin board community, and they post little free events that are free to enter, but usually somebody, the host, would chip in prizes for people to run. We couldn't ever charge entry into a tournament because then it would be competing with Magic Online's interests. So I'm not sure what year it was. It might have been like 2003, right around there. It was right around Dark Steel came out. And essentially, one of my friends heard about all these tournaments, and a lot of them were like budget or weird formats, which were a lot cheaper than playing standard. So what happened was him and another guy were going to make a peasant deck challenge, which they called PDC. Peasant allowed up to 5 uncommons, and if you play on Magic Online, you can't really deck check people.
Okay, true.
And the Darksteel set was printed one of the most powerful uncommons, and we had no way to regulate or ban it. And the card pool was very tiny, and the Skull Clamp card was just like insane and way overpowered. So I ended up suggesting we play just with commons. And we ended up playtesting that a lot, and we had a ton of fun, and then it developed into its own format. And we renamed it, since we already had the initials. Everything back then was about initials and abbreviations. So we already named it PDC. So we changed it from the Peasant Deck Challenge into the Pauper Deck Challenge.
I suppose that makes sense, because if you're making decks entirely out of commons, your deck costs 70 cents.
Yes. Well, some of the cards are really expensive. Like, there are decks up 70-ish bucks, but for the most part, under $10 easily.
Wow. So how'd you get into the Versus 2.0 then?
I was always interested in Versus, but I'd always been more heavily influenced by Magic, and all my friends played Magic. Well, one of my friends got into the game right when it came out after Gen Con, when it came into stores. And we actually had a pretty big community, about 16 to 20 people showing up every week.
Wow, that's impressive. Jeez.
Yes. And so I ended up trying it out and started playing. But right about that same time, they had stopped playing. Because it was about the end of August or beginning of September last year. And they had stopped playing because Game of Thrones finally released. And there was no tournament support for Versus at the time. And they knew there would be with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, UDE definitely took their time with the tournament support.
I'm glad of what we have. I think it could be improved upon, but I still really like Versus at its current state. It just has to get over that negative hype that it had at the beginning.
I definitely agree with that.
So I guess we'll start off. Gen Con ended a few weeks ago. We all know Thanos won.
Hooray!
We'll touch base on Thanos later. But to start out, we've got kind of a cool dissection of everything that was in the 10K. Breaking it down, I have percentages, but to make it really easy for everybody, the big cards, Cosmo, 70% of the decks, Kane, 52% of the decks, Punisher, 47% of the decks, and Warlock in 45% of the decks that we're playing. Oh, and Singularity, 55% of the decks. So we have these, like, five cards, which are huge within the meta.
But they're pretty easy
to
take out?
Yeah, I don't see many of those cards changing anytime soon, though, because they're all very, very powerful, above the power level of most of the other cards in the current pool of cards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with any of these cards.
Well, I was thinking, do we see Pulse Rifle sort of becoming a standard tech now? Is Cosmo obviously the outright winner? 70% of decks played Cosmo, but only 16% of the decks played even the odds. So he wasn't there to get any tricks. He was literally just there for his ability.
Company does have a lot of strong support right now.
Once it is timed right, can like change the outcome of a game.
I'd agree with that.
I'm not sure though if Pulse Rifle will be a standard tech, because I'm not sure how powerful or what you'd run in a deck that you'd have enough copies of to get the equipment on like any team. With the equipment being team stamped, it's really hard to get them in there. Now I can see Kane in almost any deck.
Well, we seem to have a lot of decks now that are running like 12 land. So the Dragon deck ran 12, and I keep seeing more and more lists with 12 or 12 resources locations.
Kane. Like, I don't know. He seems a standard nowadays. So, like, you don't need to run as much land because you have someone who would dig for it and force a reshuffle. And then he's a one-trick pony. But I guess with Singularity, does that check him? Will he keep coming back in? Does he keep doing it?
Yeah, that's a workhorse.
Every time he appears.
So good.
I ran Kane in a recent tournament with Singularity, and he's very good. But you have to have enough basic locations for him to get. Unless your deck only wants one copy of a basic location, or once you do it four times, you don't have anything to dig for anymore.
That's a solid
point.
Don't
have him in front of me. But is he a May? Or is he always?
He's reveal cards from the top of your deck until you reveal a basic location. Put it in your hand, shuffle the rest of the reveal cards into your deck. So if you have no more basics, you literally just reveal your deck, shuffle your deck, and go about your business.
That sounds like not a lot of fun.
Sounds like a stall tactic.
So that's a good segue. Do we think we're going to see tournaments with a longer time limit now, because we have all these reveal and shuffle effects. Kane, Pixie, the Queen, both are MC and are supporting characters. We get more and more. I know we've play tested, and 30 minutes is getting shorter and shorter. Tim, you ran into a problem running your Doctor Strange.
So in my Doctor Strange deck, I love the deck, and it works amazing. But even in like a 30 or 40 minute time limit, at the a recent tournament was 40 minutes, and it was very hard to finish in time.
Is it just because of all the reshuffling effects and card digging?
Yes. So in that deck, I was playing Kane, Pixie, and one copy of Sister Grimm. So I had a lot of shuffling and added a lot of extra unneeded time to my deck.
Yeah.
So we think maybe you said even 40 was kind of short. Does Upper Deck look
good? Well, that was
45, 50 minute rounds?
That was just with that deck, which is already a slow deck. But I think from what I heard from Gen Con, even with Kane being in 52% of the decks, yep, that the rounds mostly finished on time.
So now, do you think they should go best 2 out of 3? Just up that time a little bit longer? Or is one game enough?
I'm so used to Magic. The fact that this isn't 2 out of 3 is still weird to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the best 2 out of 3. They do that for the top 8, but instead they do Swiss plus 2 to get more rounds in.
Okay.
Because that's what they typically have done at the larger tournaments, is Swiss plus 2, so they add 2 extra rounds to compensate for that. Because if you get stuck against the MC that you're just terrible at, you're just going to lose 2 out of 3, and it's going to take longer time, whereas if you just play a single game, maybe you can spike it and win it, or you're going to lose, but you still don't have to play it again.
I suppose.
It
makes sense with Magic since you sideboard. And
yeah, with this game, no sideboarding means that if you lose the first time, there's a good chance you're going to lose the second time.
Yeah, and I was a little weirded about no sideboard when I first started playing, but the more I play, Versus as a whole is so transformational that 15 cards in and out, I can totally change my deck pretty much every time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that would be healthy for the format or not. I think this isn't Magic, and we shouldn't look at it as Magic. And I think the single round eliminations are fine.
I haven't played in a lot of tournaments, but I think 2 out of 3 scares me. Because you're right, I could get that mirror match or something that I'm not good at and just fail. But at least with one, I can go crazy tricks, go all out, and play not necessarily safe, but for the win.
I don't mind it. I'm used to the idea of no sideboard now, and it makes sense with only one round. I like the idea that you're getting more rounds in when you go to a tournament.
I've never played anything with a sideboard, so this is just natural.
All right, so let's talk about Big Blue.
He's purple.
Kind of purplish.
He's wearing a blue outfit with gold accents.
Whatever.
He's purple.
It's 43% of the Gen Con field, right? The number one MC, 49 decks played him. He got to 62.5%. At the top 8, 75% when we get to the top for the top 4, so the semifinals, and then obviously it's mirror match at the end.
War of attrition.
Who can gauntlet first?
I really said always from the beginning I was sort of pro Thanos. Like, I wanted numbers. I thought people were just complaining. I needed to see like evidence. But the more I look at these numbers, the more I swing to the, like, something needs to happen.
So I have to ask.
Yeah.
Banned or errata?
I'm going to be upset either way.
I was originally pro Thanos because I felt Storm could beat it, and there were several other decks that could beat it or at least put up a fight against Thanos. But as after Goblin Queen got released, it was a lot harder. His dominance became a lot larger. And then after Kane hit, it's even stronger now. It's even more consistent.
I agree with that. I love math. And so I did some math on it. And provided you play 8 Goblin Queen friendly locations, you've got a 63% chance that on turn 4 you've got Goblin Queen and the location to use her. Most of the time, it's level 4 Thanos.
Level 4?
Or Thanos? Turn 4 level.
Level 4 would be scary. Level 2 is hard enough.
Level 4 Thanos.
So I guess what's the answer then? Do we? I'm not a fan of ban. I still don't think that's it. I know a lot of people have proposed the having it be your own KO pile for level. I tested that a little bit with Peter, and it did run better, but I don't think it was. I don't know. I think it'll still cause complaints.
Still turn 4 Goblin Queen.
Or I'm sorry, not your own KO pile. Your opponent's KO pile.
Oh.
Because, yeah, if it's your own, Goblin Queen still fills it up.
So does Kane.
My idea might be off the beaten path. A lot of people just say, don't allow tokens to hit the KO pile, meaning tokens wouldn't give Thanos credit.
Mm-hmm.
But my solution is that not a specific solution of a change to him, but a change to him overall, that Upper Deck and Super Awesome Games can actually decide what they want to do with it. But I've been thinking about it for a while. The reason I haven't posted many articles recently is I've been playing Diablo 3. And the new season just came out. And with the new season, there's a different meta. Okay? So different classes get slight tweaks, but during the season, they don't change class features around or anything like that. Only at the end of a season, and they'll buff some abilities on a class and then take some away, and they'll do that for all the classes. What the metagame is what's going to be good as a team to do, because you push higher and higher difficulties. It's like they have pre-generated levels that have increasing difficulty, like the monsters get so much percent stronger each time, and you have to figure out like what team builds will be good in that meta until it changes in the next season.
Yep.
Now, while that just seems like a random tirade off into nowhere, what I was thinking about is what if every year, say January at the beginning of the year, they came out with a little pack, say for like $10, that reprinted cards, say that they misprinted, or reprint certain characters to make them a little more relevant or a little less relevant.
I actually kind of had that same idea.
So, example, Thanos only discarding one card or whatever. Take your pick of all the different options people have tried to fix Thanos with.
So you sort of and run it like a really cheap version of all the additions of Magic. I have to bring things back to Magic because everybody knows it. So every year we get 10th ed, 11th ed, where we're just fixing cards or making them more relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, my idea kind of was...
Maybe in those packs they could also throw some things to make some of the older teams a little more relevant or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, my idea was if they banned Thanos, they should give us another Thanos right away. Something to... Because I'm not a big fan of banning. Call him like the Mad Titan or something.
Or even just a replacement.
Yeah, I think that...
Yeah.
I think if you get rid of Thanos, I think his court death keeps Phoenix in check, as well as Valkyrie decks in check for the most part. And I think that's very useful to have in the meta. But the Infinity Gauntlet's actually the problematic ability.
Yeah, I have a solution. It was just print a card called Squirrel Girl. Just when she's out on the field, he can't do anything.
Just him?
just him. It's literally a Thanos hate. But now we have Hope, who copies like all 4 power loaders you put on people and has +20/+20. So, really Hope. But, and on this note, I figured out why Death D didn't really like Thanos. Because he keeps getting beat up by little girls.
Here comes the tirade by Theo.
You know, I try to have something for that, but Deadpool got with death, and I don't really understand that.
It made also Thanos beat up jealous. By little girls every day.
Every other day.
I don't think he got beat up by Squirrel Girl a whole lot. Twice? I thought that was Doom's Doctor Doom. I'm getting the name horribly wrong.
You know, it doesn't matter. There's going to be no Squirrel Girl card.
I mean, I'm okay with just a Squirrel Girl card.
Yeah, Great Lake Avengers! I just got a thumbs down.
Yeah. So kind of on that, let's talk about the state of the meta here now that we have equipment and everything coming out. We've had the Lieutenant Ripley deck that uses X-Men and equipment, specifically Hope for, you know, double or copying powers. We have the Dragon deck with X-Men for readying.
I have not seen a Dragon deck with X-Men yet.
I think that was your deck, Carlos.
Yeah, I built it.
Oh, okay. That's what it is.
I heard of Deadpool with aliens. How is that Dragon deck with X-Men going, though?
I don't know. I haven't played it. I've been playtesting the 10K Dragon deck.
How's that one going?
It's amazing. Pretty much autopilots. Which is really mean to say about it, but it's perfect for that kind of deck.
I don't know. I don't know if it like super autopilots. I think it has some tactical decisions you have to make early on about when to use your fortresses to ready, what to do with certain cards so that you don't overextend yourself. I know the first couple games we played, it was really fun to just run in with the dragon and level him as quick as possible, but it hurt you mid and late game.
Yeah, level 2 on turn 2 is great, except for when Thanos eats my resources.
Well, then you have nothing. You use most of your fortresses, so what do?
I cry.
So meanwhile, back to the Hope and equipment. Do we think we're going to see a Guardians resurgence?
Just reset the base stats.
Yeah, even the odds is a pretty good card.
Yondu, Cosmo.
Vigilante Justice.
Vigilante Justice only gives you Ferocious.
So you get to attack before everyone else. Unless they have Ferocious.
But Hopes of 2020 with ridiculous power loader tricks.
Didn't I just say even the odds?
I've played with and against and seen other, sorry, I haven't played against, but I've seen other play people play against the Lieutenant Ripley deck with X-Men and Hope Summers. And I think it, at the moment, the builds I've seen at least, it lacks some consistency.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. I built the one that I saw on Facebook, and we didn't know the equipment rules yet, so it was a little inconsistent right there. But just hitting what you need is rough, and some cards are just dead in there.
Yeah, if you get what you need, it is just fantastic. It is amazing. But when you don't, your deck kind of just sits there and does nothing.
Yeah.
I think it's got a good promise. At least the concept of using a company with X-Men has some power behind it. I just don't think, I agree, I don't think we've seen the deck yet.
I definitely think there's a deck there too. I just haven't seen it yet.
I feel like there's just so many cards that could be swapped out, even just situationally. Like, what don't I use? Well, I don't use Gambit. Well, that opened up, like, 3 slots, and now I have, like, Black Panther as a choice, Daredevil as a choice, and then I could start branching out into other teams on top of that.
I ended up running, on my version of it, I ended up running Daredevil, and I think 2 Black Panther, some Earth's Mightiest Heroes, and a couple Think Agains.
Nice.
I like Daredevil with the power loader.
A blind guy driving a mech suit?
That doubles his attack against an MC. 'Cause 16-16 coming at you.
So Guardians, I know we mentioned that. Do we see that coming back? Like, even the odds against anything that came out in Aliens is like the golden card.
It's been very useful in my Star-Lord deck.
I mean, even the odds, I think, will always be relevant, but I'm not sure what relevant Guardians-based decks are out there that much at the moment.
He went away. He won the first 10K at Gen Con. He was, you know, the tier one, and then they evaporated.
He was pretty much all about ramp, and that's pretty much kind of going away.
Well, the reason for that is because Star-Lord offered temporary ramp, but you have permanent ramp with Dark Phoenix.
True story.
So why would you use temporary ramp when you have permanent ramp now?
Yeah.
You also get two more life with Dark Phoenix.
Yep.
And way more attack when she levels up. Yes. Plus flight range.
Who Dark Phoenix seems to be the big mamma jam on campus now. The UK 2.5, which just happened, we had Ashley Knox won that using Dark Phoenix. And then there was a tournament, a smaller one, in Lynbrook, New York, that was just yesterday, was August 28th, Dark Phoenix won that tournament. So she seems to be the big contender coming out.
So now do you think decks like Magneto are going to start coming against that to start blowing up those resources to slow her down?
I don't know if losing one resource will really slow her down.
By turn four, she's past where she cares about Magneto, I think. That's the thing.
God damn it, Jean Grey.
She's big and she's powerful and she's scary and...
She ate a sun and blew up a galaxy.
That's it?
Yeah, I guess Thanos did destroy half the universe.
See? Thanos wins again.
So I've got the list that Ashley used in the UK 2.5. And I'll just let you know, his low drops are Pixie Sing. Used four of each. And then we go Iron Man, A-Force Loki, Ghost Rider, A-Force Phoenix, Dharamaru, and Thanos. And he obviously did very well. I think he went 4-0, 5-0. He basically didn't lose a game throughout the entire thing. But when I look at this, decks like this have always said to me, glass cannon. You get it, and you win. You don't, and it just explodes in your face.
I'm sure his mulligan conditions are like Pixie in hand, Sing in hand, and at least two yellows. Like, you need that to go.
I'm a fan of Pixie Singularity combo, but if that's in a deck like the Sister Grimm deck by Anthony Calabrese,
yeah,
he still had drops every turn, and he was using that more of like card advantage catch up rather than trying to cheat things into play.
Yeah, and that makes sense. It's this version of the deck, or the versions that came out when Pixie Sing first released, that were up to a 3-drop and then sixes, that I don't know. It doesn't work to me. I tried to do the math on Pixie Sing. However, it is extremely complicated statistics, and I did not get there.
Nerd.
I'm betting basically Pixie Sing's an alternative if either Phoenix is locked down via a Cosmo, or you don't draw the double yellow.
Yeah.
It's just redundancy, though. Redundancy in a different color and different creatures.
Suppose I'd like to see it work. It's got 11 plot twists and a couple locations, 20 locations, so it's pretty location-heavy.
Dark Phoenix, when they're brought in via her power, are they flipped up if they're locations?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Haven't played a lot of her.
Just like Nick Fury.
Okay. But good.
Hey, he wasn't bad. That's all I have.
So before we move on here, I'm going to give a shout out to Ashley Knox of the UK. You won the tournament. Where's our deck list? I would like to talk about the deck list and the things that happened at your tournament. But I can't because you're hoarding the deck list. Where are my deck lists?
He is yelling at us about being on iTunes.
I know. He's got to get on this.
So then we do too?
So here at Team Attack Podcast, we'd like to formally ask him for the deck list nicely. Hey, you're an awesome guy. Please give us your deck list.
All right. So now that we've, you know, publicly shamed Ashley, who does seem like a pretty cool guy. Let's move on.
Poor guy.
We did touch on the dragon deck, but I know we wanted to go more in depth about it.
I really liked it. We built it here. We played a number of games with it, and I only have a couple weaknesses. Most of them are easy overreach, so it does require, in my opinion, some tactical thinking in the beginning. You can't overextend your resources. You have to make smart plays, but it is so consistent.
Yeah, but I've been locked down by that Magneto supporting character so many times, and there's no way around it with people in front.
Yeah, that would be that would be my other one. Board control. It does not deal well with board control. I've got, well, my Thanos deck is not your typical Thanos deck. It uses Magneto, and every time I've played against the dragon with it, I've won just because I've had Magneto out. I've locked down the board, and you can't do anything.
I'd also like to point out it has nothing to do with Gauntlet in turn four. Nothing to do with that. It's Magneto.
That's true. I did Gauntlet Dragon turn four, and he came back just beautifully. And it was only when Magneto came out that he just got crushed.
I did almost beat him.
Same here. Stupid Magneto.
I know, Tim, you did a lot of testing against the dragon.
Yeah, I did a lot of testing with and against the dragon. We ended up playing it against Captain Marvel, Sister Ripley 8, Doctor Strange, the Lieutenant Ripley deck, and I think a couple other decks as well. It actually, like, in testing, it did very well against all of them. Even when Captain Marvel had Magneto back there locking him down, he could still get to Magneto and finish him.
So there's a difference. Well, my Thanos plays a lot of the two life higher level guys, so Wolverine, Rogue, Drax, that I can sort of stall my front row and keep Magneto safe in the back. And as long as you don't have any, as long as you don't have multiple leaping xenomorphs, he can be pretty safe.
I guess I don't like Overmorph in this. Maybe I just don't like Overmorph because I don't ever find use for it, because it hits the board and then it just sits there, becomes a target until your next build phase is when you can do something. And then you only have like a 75% chance to draw. And then you need a space to make it something useful.
I think one of the other problems I saw with him was 12 resources. So he seemed cane heavy for a lot of that. When it worked, it was beautiful. I think I was playing you, Peter, and I got turn 4 queen off of that.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, you end games at that point.
Oh, yeah. With the Overmorph?
Yep.
Yeah. It is very high risk, high reward. Sometimes it's a good fit against your opponent, and sometimes it isn't. So it's just in there probably for those times that you can just get the queen out like that. In our testing, though, since we weren't in a Thanos meta, we ended up swapping out...
took out Black Cat?
Black Cat and Build the Hive. So Build the Hive, we ended up trying out Let's Rock, which is versatile enough to work for defense and offense.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, instead of Black Cat, we ran three more academies. Or three academies, rather. And while you're not guaranteed a fortress or a space off of Kane anymore, just purely one of those, having that in hand to discard to Perfect Organism is a huge bonus.
I'd rather have that than Black Cat Amplify to make him a 12-8.
Yeah, literally, that's how we could get through to get to Magneto.
Okay.
So that's a powerful swing on it. Now, I will say, I liked Build the Hive. I played against Peter's Enchantress deck, who does a lot with counters, does a lot with Megan. And I will say that this deck, as written, has great, like, plot twist control of your opponent's board and of their characters. Spook, Build the Hive, Shock, Chest Burst. It can do a really good job at mitigating what your opponent can do, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I imagine it's great. It's just in our meta, we decided to cut it from the time being. I still like it in the deck, especially if you run into a Luke Cage or something like that. Then you're just going to win just because of that card alone.
But say, it seems like Build a Hive is a very meta card. Like, if your meta doesn't need it, you can run without it and not be hurt. Or if your meta is like very Luke Cage heavy or Thanos heavy, if you're still in those kind of metas, it's great there.
So what did you find? Did you find any bad matchups against it when you were testing, Tim?
It did pretty well overall. Sometimes it required a little getting used to the other decks. It did lose to a few different decks, but once we started playing around things and got better with the deck, it was easier to overcome those decks.
I know Kobe, who won the 10K, I'm pretty sure it was Kobe, said that he wasn't super worried about it after he got the list and had the night to sort of look it over, and was confident Thanos could get through him.
Is Thanos just, like, ready for anybody? Like, are you not scared because you have answers for everything?
Probably.
I think you can play around Build the Hive, and maybe that's what caught a lot of people off guard, by just keeping things in your hand. But I believe a good player can play around quite a bit of different decks out there, especially once they know the opponent's list.
Yeah.
Darn these good players.
One day I hope to be one.
The one matchup, if you notice, I didn't list is we didn't test it against Thanos because we had, it was under a gentleman's agreement not to play it.
So speaking of that, how did your tournament go? I know you wanted to give a tournament report about the one you went to in Florida.
Yeah, so I drove 2 hours to Clearwater, and we ended up playing at Emerald City Comics, I believe it's what it's called. There were only, including me and my friend, there were only six there. And he ended up running Dragon with the changes mentioned, and I ended up running Doctor Strange. First round, I went up against my friend, randomly.
Nice.
And I beat his Dragon deck. Like we had tested a bit with it, and with the changes I made, I had no problem with the Dragon deck at all. Then I ended up playing against Captain Marvel. And Captain Marvel for a Doctor Strange deck is just like candy. Because all those plus one counters is like a free stun with mass transmutation. That was also when I was talking about my tech against Thanos. Although I've made the deck a lot slower with more search effects now. That time was the problem, and I actually lost due to time to the Captain Marvel deck. But the reason why is if he courts death, you get a free stun on Thanos pretty much.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
With my version of the deck.
I remember
and I can recover
in
quickly.
The first Marvel Battles when it came out, the Doctor Strange supporting character was the tech against Thanos. He's the one you didn't want to see come out.
Yep. Oh, and I love the tech in the Sister Ripley deck of having Doctor Strange and Iron Man and Thinkingan in there. That was amazing. Have you guys noticed that one?
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah.
It was in Kirk and Eric's list.
Oh, and they did Magneto
basically,
like Origins?
What? No, Gen Con.
Oh, really?
They're on top 8. How yeah, I think that? It wasn't Kirk, it was Eric, his brother, made top 8 with their list. And I noticed that after playing with it the first time, the combo is, so you level up from Sister Ripley level 2 to Ripley number 8 level 2. And then you go up to two wounds only. Well, that next turn, you can use your laboratory ability to put any number of -1/-1 counters on her and put that many -1/-1 counters on an enemy character.
And then you strange to
you
bump her up.
You strange and then pump her up like crazy. So not only do you get to kill something, but your 5/7 gets +6, +6, so it's 11, 13.
I can see that being useful.
You know,
yeah, so once I saw that, I was like, wow.
And now that you mention it, I do remember that deck list. I did not see that combo, though.
Wow. Just wow.
Anyways, back to what I was talking about. So round three, I went against Black Cat. And I thought I actually had a pretty good matchup against Black Cat, and the opponent actually said, of all people in the tournament, he didn't want to play Doctor Strange because every time he's played against Doctor Strange, he's lost. And he ended up beating me. I had really bad draws, and anything I did draw that was good, he Ronin'd out of my hand. And Kane added so much consistency to that deck. He basically can drop a creature and keep his card hand count up just as high.
Yeah, that's a solid point.
That's a good trick for him. So what was, so the, I ended up going, what was the style of his Black Cat deck? Because I built an old school like mill style deck, which did not work at all because milling does not end the game, but I enjoyed it.
It was definitely not a mill style deck. It was just, I forget exactly what other affiliation he had in there because it wasn't all Femme Fatale, but he played with something else. I forget exactly what it was. It might have been Company, but I'm not sure offhand. His deck was very good, though. He ended up going undefeated in the tournament.
We need that list. Add that to the list of lists.
My friend with Dragon, he ended up losing to me. Then he ended up beating the queen player. And then he ended up losing to the Lieutenant Ripley X-Men Hope equipment deck. And I stayed after and I watched Deadpool Aliens deck play against the Lieutenant Ripley equipment deck. But like I said, sometimes just that deck isn't consistent. So sometimes it just folds to itself. And it kind of felt folded to itself. But Deadpool was playing a 12 location build as well, and it didn't get, until like turn 7, it didn't get a single yellow source.
Ooh.
He was already level 2 on like turn 4, but he didn't get a single yellow source, and he ended up winning because of Leaping Xenomorphs, but it was like a really tense game.
Sometimes those are the most fun.
Yeah, and Lieutenant Ripley just didn't hit equipment all game.
Well, that's even rougher.
Like, I think there was one blue or two blue drawn only. And he used one blue to get Bishop out early. Or one Earth, not blue. One Earth to get Bishop out super early and put a rifle on him, I think. And then there didn't get any equipment until much later in the game. And didn't get any Earth to do anything. And I think he played one Kane or maybe two Kanes and still didn't hit an Earth.
Oh, see, I feel I've had that problem with my Lieutenant Ripley deck, which I built as Mono Company because I really like Hicks and Captain Dallas. But I just feel every time I use her ability, I'm always skimming 5 cards and not finding an equipment. I play 11. But I never hit it when I need it.
You did against me.
But not against Peter. Never against Peter.
Damn. Those abilities don't work on me.
I'm giving you angry eyes right now.
Also, a weird thing is that if you use Kane, you have to shuffle afterwards, but Lieutenant Ripley's search for equipment, it puts it on bottom, so you'd almost not want to use Kane in the deck, because Kane shuffles it so you can get those cards back theoretically and not hit Kane. Like with Cerebro, if you don't play any shuffle effects, you're gonna eventually hit something.
Yeah, that's true.
But when you shuffle, who knows?
So I have a random obscure rules question that came up. I was reading one of the articles for the Toptic Player going on. And it was talking about Miss Marvel. Mentioned he went through the tournament, But he specifically talked about winning a game because he had Rogue kill an Ovomorph, and then Rogue hatched the next turn. Now I thought, oh, how does that work? Because if you read the card and if you look in the rules, it says, you know, you draw a facehugger card from your facehugger pile. It's sort of indescript about if the facehugger pile exists, so even if you don't play any Ovomorphs, but somehow you get that ability, do you get those cards?
Well, if you have the alien set, you just have your own pile of it, don't you? Just keep Rogue and just assume you're going to play an alien Ovomorph. Just keep it there.
Are tokens so I know the article, like, general for everybody?
Well, that's the question.
What were they like
in so Magic? I know the article. The article talks about if you MC something, if you mind control something, then it uses the Ovomorph owner's facehugger file. But with Rogue, I believe they clarified it somewhere, but I'm not sure if Rogue, I think Rogue still uses their facehugger pile.
So it would use the owner of the face or the Ovomorph, their pile.
Yes. I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's how it works.
Alright, see, well, this is one of the things we need a Chad ruling on, but it was just sort of an obscure idea, because the person writing the article playing Miss Marvel didn't play Ovomorph, didn't play Aliens, and the whole idea of tokens is sort of ambiguous. It does say in the rules, if two people are playing Ovomorphs, they each have their own pile. So it gives some allusion to the fact that it is just a universal stack of cards that's there. Facehuggers just exist for anyone at any point, but it's never spelled out.
In the article, I believe that introduced them, they said that each player that has Ovomorphs has their own facehugger pile. That way, for example, if I
use two facehuggers, then I'm not leaving you with the shitty odds of pulling a extended
incubation.
Thank you.
Yes, each person has their own pile for that reason, but for somebody who doesn't have their own pile, they will use the opponent's pile. I'm pretty certain that's the ruling.
Well, so do we have Chad with us?
It obviously was the ruling at this tournament, so it seems to have some validity behind it. It's just one of those obscure things. I checked the pinned fact on the collective page. It wasn't there, so I figured I might bring it up, and if anybody important listens to this, maybe they'll throw it in. So Kirk, I'm talking to you.
Anyone? No, not here with us? Okay.
Well, does anybody have anything else they want to go over?
Let me shuffle some paper here.
It's really annoying.
I don't have anything.
No, I think we covered it.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us for the second episode of Team Attack. Join us next time. We're going to be doing a deck dissection on Peter's Enchantress deck. Hopefully we're going to have some leaks of the new Marvel set that UDE is putting out. And hopefully we'll have some more information about the UK 2.5 K to go over. Opening and closing music were brought to you by Roll Music, the song Playing. We're always taking submissions for decks to talk about, for suggestions on different things you'd like to hear about on the episodes, and just any questions or comments that any might have. We're Team Attack on Facebook, Team Attack Podcast on Facebook. Feel free to email us at teamattackpodcast@gmail.com.
That's teamattackpodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening, and as a special surprise, by the time this episode goods up, we should be on iTunes.
Hopefully.
Yay! Woo! Yay! Positive side!
So I've been your host, Carlos Luna.
Peter Heddles.
Theo Coyer.
And Tim Saunders.
Yay!
Woo!
Until next time, guys, happy deck building.